morning. You are watching Deep Program with Jamarl Thomas and Ted Rall. It is Friday, June 26, 2026. Thank you so much for joining us. JT, are you up and running? You look puzzled, and I know you were on and off in the minute before we came on. Okay, that's no problem. All right, so we'll let JT do that, and I'll do some housekeeping. Thanks, everyone, for joining us. We're here Monday through Friday, 9 a.m., to deprogram you from the mainstream bullshit. Appreciate you joining us, following, liking, sharing the show. Yesterday, just a little housekeeping, we didn't get to do the DMZ America podcast with Scott Stantis. Not my fault. It was Scott's. He had to go see the doctor. Anyway, for him and his luxury item, going to get medical care in this country. But anyway, we are going to do it at 11 a.m. this morning, Eastern Time. That's 2 hours from now. We're going to be talking about the pervy cartoonist, cartoon museum curator, and his upskirt video scandal that's rocking the cartoon world. TMI at 10 a.m. Please put in your comments if you're watching live in the 9 a.m. hour Eastern in YouTube or Rumble, pursuant to Robbie's diktat coming, which he's merely passing down, like Moses coming down from the mountain from the overlords of Rumble. It's not his fault, but we need you guys to, if you don't normally do it, just pop into the chat and ideally say something, you know, meaningful. But if you are like the president of the United States and you have nothing to say meaningful, don't let that stop you. Just go in and say, yo, or whatever.
Yeah. But just to be clear, if your chat on YouTube does nothing, it has to be a Rumble chat.
Right. Although we don't mind we love your comments on YouTube as well, but this specific call to action is for Rumble. All right. Thank you very much for that, Robbie. And I'm sure we will be seeing more of you. Looking forward to the weekend. I don't know about you, JT. I need the rest. Okay, so main stories today. Iran, things are getting spicy in the Strait of Hormuz again. Iran fired on a vessel that was trying to skirt its regime for passing through the strait by going through the Omani
section. One second, I'll be right back. The sound is off. Something's going screw with my sound, and I can't really hear you guys. Give me 1 second. I'll be right back.
No problem. So, all right. So I'll go ahead and I'll take Jamarl out, and you and I can just do this for a second. Anyway, we'll be talking about the Strait of Hormuz situation. Some vessels had been trying to skirt the Iranian side and go through the Omani side. The Iranians are making very clear, like, no, there's no workarounds. You have to come through the Omani, Iranian side. Otherwise, we will drone you and our drones can reach you. And that's what happened yesterday. No one hurt, but the vessel was damaged. The Postal Service, I thought this was an interesting story. I hope you guys agree. The Postal Service is refusing to mail election ballots within states that refuse to turn over their absentee voter lists to the federal government. Let me be really clear here. The federal government doesn't control elections in the United States. Only states and municipalities do. So the federal government is trying to not only intrude into the electoral system that is constitutionally run by the states, but they're trying to collect confidential voter data from people like you and I, JT. And obviously, who knows what they're going to do with it. And this also makes me question if the Postal Service has become this politicized, it literally could decide, like, hey, we're not going to send mail from Democrats or from Ted Rall or from Jamarl Thomas or whatever. I mean, if they're not just sending mail, then they're no longer a public utility anymore, right? There's something else. I don't know what they are. I mean, and finally, I guess we saw this coming. South Korea, which has a major military, is planning to issue drones to each and every one of its 500,000 soldiers. So basically as a, like the same as a personal sidearm that, you know, everyone to be a soldier in the South Korean military means that you have to be able to and willing to and equipped with to use drones. So obviously I think this is the beginning. We're going to see that a lot more in other countries. It's going to become, I think, standardized very soon, and it's a brave new world. Anyway,
yeah.
JT, where would you like to start?
It's also going to be standardized in our police forces.
Mm.
If you do, you remember Minority Report?
I do. Great. Where,
yeah, they would send the automated drone into the house in order to sniff, in order to find the person, because and it's rational, right? If you think about it, I mean, again, the issue with this stuff is that it's we have a screwed up world. If the world was a better place, then these drones would be used for different things, but we use these things for militaristic pursuits. And so you have a drone that would go into a house. We don't necessarily want to risk the policeman in the house by a guy with a potential gun. And so we send the drone in to sniff him out. And if we can't necessarily get him out safely, we put a bullet in him using a robot to do so.
That's already been done a bunch of times.
Yeah. I mean, hell, Russia was using those drone dogs that would run into a house and then blow the house up, and the drone would be like a dog. And again, this was also on Black Mirror, where the dog drones were effectively roaming the countryside and roaming the world, going after people.
And now robotics makes that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's terrifying. I mean, when you think about it, these are flying killer robots. And in some cases, we're delegating the responsibility to the robot to kill people, which, again, it's rational. I mean, if you care about your population and you say, okay, well, we want to initiate war, but we don't want to get our people killed in the war. And more to the point, people don't necessarily like putting themselves on the line or being killed in wars. So let's use flying killer robots to effectively go and do the job that we human beings don't necessarily want to do. And when you see those animatronic robots, either in China or that the US is trying to make, where you can knock them down, they get back up, they can hold guns, they can go out and do a particular job. They may be very clumsy in the beginning, but at a certain point, obviously, the technology is going to get more pronounced. That is the future. That is the future. That of you can make an argument of potentially law enforcement or in the context of war. And I think people need to, you're losing your world. Like basically, why do you think that billionaires are so interested in robots that can fight wars, work factories, et cetera? It's because human beings ultimately have a faculty where they can say no, even if they're conditioned. I mean, a cop can turn around and say, well, I don't want to kill this person, as opposed to having a robot that would just do it and not have a conscience about the fact that they did it. When you have soldiers that you don't necessarily have to go to the population and say, we want to have these wars. Okay, what does it mean to have the president's men? And president's men can commit particularly any atrocity without necessarily having feelings about the fact that they've committed an atrocity. Like, this is, a brave new world is an understatement. That's an understatement.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, look, I think, you know, a Pollyanna would say, hey, let's just, you know, try to not go that direction, but that's going to happen. It's always going to be a technological race to the moral bottom. Yeah. So, I mean, we should just accept that and try to mitigate the damage and try to analyze what it all means, right? Which is why we're here. What it means, of course, is that killing is going to get easier and easier. I mean, aerial bombardment made killing easier when it, you know, the first time it originated, right, was in World War One, I believe, right. Where a pilot was passing over an Ottoman, I think it was a British pilot, was passing over an Ottoman encampment in like a desert area. And he realized he happened to have a couple of grenades in his cockpit. And he was like, huh, I wonder if, and then he dropped the grenades on the, and that was the first time, you know, explosives were dropped from an airplane in combat. You know, obviously that's accelerated. We had the drone wars that started under Bush, expanded under Obama, and they're off to the races now. And obviously Ukraine is the first full-fledged drone war where it's, you know, used in massive, at a massive scale. You can't live in places like Pakistan without, in the tribal areas, without constantly hearing the buzzing of drones passing over you, circling constantly. You just never know when suddenly, you know, one's going to shoot a missile and blow you up or blow up something down the street or whatever. I mean, the thing is, I had this conversation with Bernie Sanders when I interviewed him for my book about him. I said, you know, what do you want to do about drones? And he said, oh, well, you know, person's dead whether you kill them with, you send a soldier over there with a gun and you shoot them with a bullet, or you fire them with a, kill them with a drone. And I said, yeah, but it's easier with the drone. And he said, he conceded that point. And I mean, I think that's the problem, is that when you had traditional warfare, you know, war was a big investment for the political class. Like, it's a risk. Like, we're going to send your sons and your fathers to war. Many of them will not return. And so this had better be worth it, right?
Right.
It doesn't have to be worth it now. Now it's like you can just throw shit at the wall and see if it sticks, and no harm, no foul. The harm happens overseas until it starts to happen here, which it will. It's inevitable. And yeah. I mean, I guess the thing is, we do have the we could say we're going to have an international convention on drone warfare. We could say we have such a lead in this technology, although that's not necessarily even true. At one point it was true 10, 15 years ago. It's not true now. I mean, they have this thing at the Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Dayton called the Aviary, where it's a micro drone research installation. And they have like mosquito drones that will land on you and poison you like a mosquito. There's just no putting the genie back in the bottle. And South Korea is smart. They're like, okay, well, this is the future. We're going to have these paper plane drones. The paper airplane drones. We're going to do all those things. We've seen those. I mean, that's where war is, but it's absolutely terrifying because we've gone from a world where war took place on battlefields, usually away from cities, to now the whole planet is a war zone.
Yeah. If this idea of having a democratic order and a democratic system, it is behooving, or it behooves the populations of those countries to get control of itself in a way that it doesn't, because this world is going to shit. like meaning the things that they are doing, that billionaires are looking at the world thinking to themselves, okay, how can we make it better for ourselves, does not necessarily mean it's also better for you. And these technologies are evidence of that. Like having a robot that can basically kill, having drone swarms that can go out and basically hunt people down, or for that matter, having police that are effectively drones, which is ultimately what they want. Obviously, if you're in leadership, one of the key issues in leadership is that the people who defend you could at some point stop defending you. Like this idea that I could pay half the poor to murder the other half of the poor is a real thing. That's what militaries are. That's what, you know, these kind of paramilitaries that these guys have are. What does that mean, though, when these are not robots in the sense of people, but robots in the sense of actual robots? These things are being built. And the mosquito thing to me is even more terrifying. Like, you know, infiltration drones, drones that go out and get dissidents. Like, I don't know, man. This is a technology that your country and that a public who is informed and who is aggressive at, let's say, maintaining the integrity of society, looks like we will pay more attention to, but obviously we don't. No, like, this is going to get out of hand before we realize, holy shit, this is getting out of hand. And at that point, it might be too late.
You know what this reminds me of? I think it was the original Star Trek episode, JT. You'd know better than me.
Was it?
There was this episode, and it was these two planets are at war with each other. But instead of using armies and blowing each other up, basically yes. They agree to have a more civilized form of warfare where there's like a lottery. Yep. And if you came up on a lottery, then you're put into this disintegration chamber. And that's this war going on like 200 years because
cost.
There was no cost to either government. It was just, it was a game. And I think that's what we're doing here is that we're dehumanizing war.
Yep. But perfect example, Robbie. Because what they were doing, they would say something like, all right, there was a bomb that went off in this city. 500 people were killed. And then 500 people would need to go to the incineration chamber. Now, there was no bomb that went off. They were doing this through wargaming in the sense of like, we did a drone strike on you in the electrical sense or in the theoretical sense. And we have worked it out that if we actually did have a drone and if we actually did this attack, we would have killed 300 people. So all these 300 people on your side need to go and kill themselves, basically, in a chamber. And we've done it this way because we were using drones at one point. We were using bombs. We realized that these things were costly to infrastructure and materials and et cetera, et cetera. So let's just make a deal, an agreement, to just have war in this way. And the obvious question will be, Well, why don't you just agree to not have war at all? Right? Like, if this is what we're doing, why don't we just agree to this? And the weapons treaties used to always strike me that way. It's like, so we can agree to cut down on the missile systems for this amount. So why don't we just agree to not have war in the first place? And it's like, well, that's insane. Oh, but it's insane to not have those wars and to come to agreements to not have those wars. But the wars,
we know why. We know why wars happen. Wars happen because people have intransigent disagreements, right? Yes. You know, Ukraine, you know, we want to join NATO. Russia, we can't allow that. You know, and so how is that resolved without military conflict?
We disagree. It's the issue with Ukraine is the blank check. It's the same issue as it was with Germany and Austria. Mm-hmm. It's the blank check that's the issue.
Well, yeah.
There was no issue with Ukraine antagonizing Russia up until the point that the U.S. was pressing Ukraine to make a choice, and Europe was pressing Ukraine to make a choice in order to for a treaty, or let's say a trade agreement. That they wanted to have with the Europeans as opposed to the better one that was with the Russians. Meaning that was pressed, that was pushed. This wasn't an issue. It was the U.S. pushing Georgia and pushing Ukraine.
Because the U.S. That's the why, but it did become an issue. That is,
it became an issue. But I'm just pointing out that many of these wars and many of these conflicts wouldn't be wars and conflicts if it wasn't for some party instigating these things to take place.
Sure.
I mean, would the Philippines be really that antagonistic to China if it wasn't for the U.S. agitating it? Or what about Japan? Maybe Japan would, but Japan would get his ass kicked. I guess I'm pointing out, would even Taiwan behave this way if it wasn't for the blank check coming out of the U.S.? It's the blank check. That's the issue.
But that's the point. And that's what causes wars. I mean, I don't know if you read it. The Council on Foreign Relations, they released a white paper. It was about 200 pages long. I read it. It's an interesting read called Overextending Russia. And yes. I don't know if you read it or not, but for those of you in the audience, what I'm talking about is that they war game this thing out, saying that what the goal was is to bring down the Russian economy and then split the country up into between 8 and 12 smaller states.
Yes.
But they would have to overextend Russia to make that happen. And the one thing that the Russians would never allow would be Ukrainian integration into NATO. Mm-hmm. Well, that's why Russia did what they did. Now, to Russia's credit, someone there read the same paper. So God bless them. It's like, you know, Patton reading Rommel's book. That's why wars happen, is nations have interests. And that's why wars are always going to happen. It's because one nation is going to see another one as a threat, especially a great power, in which case you need to knock that competitor out because there's no room in the system for more, for too many the large competitors. And so that's what's going to happen. It's never going to stop.
I don't know about that.
It's human nature.
Look, I'm a Star Trek
person. What alternative is there, JT, right? I mean, war is diplomacy by other means. I mean, what is there? Okay, we totally agree with, like, you know, countries like the United States are constantly provoking and giving blank checks. Agreed, that's the why, right? But the fact is that countries end up with, for whatever reason, they end up with fundamental, what they view as somewhat existential disagreements.
Yes.
How are those resolved? I mean, it would be great to be able to, you know, get a wormhole alien to say, hey, here's my case, or go to Q and say, hey, here's what we think. Okay, let's hear your side. Okay, well, I decide you win. But we don't have there's no neutral arbiter. So basically, might makes right. That's the world we live in.
War is the arbiter, ultimately. No, I understand the argument.
And that's why the U.S. has the might. That's why they provoke. That's literally what they say. They say, they tell a client state like Israel, hey, you know, you go do this for us. And don't worry, we've got your back. You know we can. Don't worry. It's cool.
I'm not optimistic in the short term. I'm optimistic in the long term, if that makes sense. Like, and the reason why I say that, look at our trajectory. We are, if we were talking about 1756, just some random time, I don't know what's happening in 1756, countries could have wars. Hell, let's go to 1940. If we're talking about it, like 1939, 1945, et cetera, countries could have these large-scale wars. There were no nukes. So you can lose hundreds of thousands of men. Hell, the Romans were losing hundreds of thousands of men. The Romans didn't have nukes. We are getting to the point where it's becoming so technologically risky to have these wars that we are going to kill all of ourselves if we indeed end up having large-scale wars. And so what do you get? You get countries like the U.S. that effectively uses proxies in order to avoid coming into grips or coming into rubbing ends with countries like Russia or China, or for that matter, even India, because, again, these are nuclear powers, and they can end the world when they have these wars. Meaning, I guess my point is, we're getting to the point as a world where having any large-scale war risks the end of all things.
Sure.
Israel is a nuclear power fighting Iran right now, and people are questioning whether or not
it's a
nuclear conflict. Same thing with Russia going after Ukraine. I mean, Russia is not talking about it, but the fact that the U.S. is backing Ukraine in this, and the fact that Europe is involved in this, makes it people very dicey about the prospect of a third world war coming from that. India and Pakistan, again, will we get to a point where it's impossible to have these conflicts without there being the risk of the end of all things? And I guess my point is, we have to get to a point of a world where we need to settle these things in ways that just don't involve war.
Well, maybe nuclear weapons are technologically obsolete, or maybe we need more nuclear proliferation, ironically. But drones might be the big game changer here. I mean, they're really – look at this war. Iran won, defeated the United States objectively, well, under previous standards, by 20th century standards, a formidable adversary that should never have been able to put a dent into, defeated them with cheap, shitty drones. And so money no longer matters, right? I mean, it's like you can spend $1.5 trillion a year, but you can still be defeated by an inferior military. Nuclear weapons don't matter unless the nuclear power is really willing to use them, which up until now, they're not. So maybe drones are the game changer because everybody can get them. Vanuatu can have drones. Everybody can have drones.
I don't think so, Ted, because you're a student of history. So think about this. One of the very first people who won the Nobel Peace Prize, I remember the guy's first name, his last name was Maxim. He was the inventor of the Maxim machine gun. It was called the Devil's Paintbrush.
Shown to great effect in that movie, The Last Samurai, the Tom Cruise movie.
Yes,
that was a Gatling gun. So, I mean, this is the next generation of it. So, I mean, it was the first real machine gun. Like, you know, all you had to do is hold on a trigger. You didn't have to do a crank like you had to do with the Gatling. And the reason why Maxim invented it is that he wanted war to become so costly that no one would fight anymore. So when the Great War started, Europeans are still fighting in continental battle style. And it was just, that's what got that name. It just wiped out entire regiments of people. And so then how did humans compensate? They didn't think about, well, maybe this is stupid. Maybe the Archduke isn't worth this. No, instead, let's revolutionize warfare by introducing poison gas. Mm-hmm. Humans are always going to become more efficient at killing other humans.
Yeah, we're very, very good at it. When I was in Afghanistan, I encountered I was told about and saw the effects of something, a mine called the Bouncing Betty. And, when triggered, it bounces about 3 feet up in the air, and it's designed to either cut you in half or blow off your genitals.
Ugh, that's unfortunate.
Ingenious. Or, like, of course, there's little the cluster bombs, cluster munitions that the United States was also dropping in Afghanistan. It was a missile, which I think had about 20 or 24 canisters. Each can was... The Americans would spray paint them bright colors, like bright yellow, bright green, in order to attract children. A lot of Afghanistan is very sandy, glacial flour. So the thing that the cluster munition breaks apart, the individual canisters, they have a mechanism inside that vibrates for like 30 seconds, just enough to bury it about halfway so that kids see something bright and shiny sticking out of the sand, go and pick it up and get blown up.
So you recount that story. Okay, two things. I want to respond to Robbie also. But you recount that story, but you disbelieve that the U.S. blew up the hospital or blew up the kids' school in Iran.
Oh, I know they blew it up.
No. I mean, on purpose.
Oh, no, I'm not discounting that. I'm saying it's entirely possible. I just don't think we don't have, I mean, you know, we're journalists here. I mean, I don't know. But I mean, from what the official story is also credible, which is that the U.S. used out of date maps. I mean, I also think that I know they do. So I know they use out of date maps. And so therefore, that's possible, too. I mean, look, to me, it's a distinction without a difference because they were reckless. If you're reckless, like, you know what I mean? Like, it's different. If I go and find you and run you over with my car, yeah, it's worse legally than if I'm just a fucking idiot and I'm texting on my phone and I'm drunk and I run you over with my car. But I'm still going to jail either way, right? I mean, it's like the end result's all the same. The fact is, I'm an asshole either way, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, we're assholes. We didn't care. We weren't careful. We didn't pay attention because we didn't value the lives of people who might be caught in the crossfire. We don't care. So what's the
also
difference?
The always thing?
It's like when the Israelis. Wait, the always thing.
I disagree with. I mean, we make assessments based on human history, and human history has always been this issue of survival being the top priority of human history. But we don't necessarily always have to be in that particular position of survival and scarcity and those type of things that basically incentivize war and conflict. And yeah, there's issues of control that come into it. But the truth of the matter is, the reason that war became more revolutionized and the reason that the guy from the machine gun was wrong is because the war didn't affect the people who were making the choice for the war. Mm-hmm. If I'm making a choice and I'm untethered to that choice, meaning I could press a button and somebody dies, what stops me from pressing the button? Nothing. And if you can sit in this kind of like George Bush can make a determination to send a bunch of people to war that he doesn't know, to kill a lot of other people that he doesn't know, then how is that adversely affecting George Bush?
You're saying that if there was a scenario or technological innovation that could mean that, say, Jenna could get blown up because George Bush starts a war, that it might change his calculus?
I'm saying if George Bush had to put himself in firing line, George Bush wouldn't have went to war.
Or the people that he cared about might be in the firing line.
True. But I guess my point is the idea that the machine gun was going to stop wars because people would have said this is so costly. Well, the question becomes costly to them. Exactly. If it costs them, then they're less inclined. Meaning our governmental structure and the way that we organize ourselves are organized in a way that incentivizes conflict.
Right.
If we were different.
The machine gun guy assumed that people would care about their fellow, that ruler leaders cared about their own citizens and cared about.
And I don't think they do.
No,
I think they care about their objectives.
The facts are clear. Clearly they don't.
Do you know what the problem with y'all's argument is? Is that y'all are thinking about this as rational human beings that have a function. Listen, what I'm saying. Y'all are thinking this thing through rationally.
We're laughing because you're right.
A lot of the leaders, they are not rational people. Logic does not apply to them. For them, it's all about power. Cost be damned. I would rather rule over the graveyard than be a peer in a city.
I agree.
So that's the point. And to your point, we are dancing around nuclear war right now. And think about what I just said. We are probably closer to nuclear war than what we were even in the Cuban Missile Crisis, because we insist, we being the West, especially Europe, who has no economy to speak of, whose industrial base has been hollowed out, their birth rate is imploding. They have all these problems, and still they want to continue provoking Russia up to the point of attacking inside Russia, even threatening their nuclear deterrent, which, if Putin followed through with their doctrine, meant that Paris would be evaporated tomorrow.
Yeah.
Macron is there. He understands this. Keir Starmer, until he resigned, understood that too. Trump understands that. Washington, D.C., Baltimore, New York City could all go away. If you're a rational person, you have factored this in. We don't have rational leaders. We are at the mercy of the least rational person in the system. That's the problem.
I'm saying that system doesn't need to propagate itself in the future. That's what I'm saying. It doesn't need to, but it will. Like, we have organized ourselves in this kind of hierarchical structure for God knows how long, because it gets shit done. Like, the people who are involved in Occupy Wall Street, and it was like, oh, we just want, you know, a diffuse group of people, et cetera, et cetera. Nonsense. Military structures get shit done, which is the reason why people put into military structures. I'm saying, though, that we are, this could be prehistory. And we're assuming that the way that we've always done things is the way that things are going to be done in perpetuity. And with technological innovation, with the way societies change over time, those type, we don't know if that's true. I'm not making the assumption that war is always going to be a part of our world. I'm hoping that's not the case.
Hope is no plan.
Said it one more time, Robbie.
Guys, hope is not a plan.
We have quite,
as long as we've got human beings on this earth, we're going to have wars.
How do you know that as a fact?
Because we're human beings, and human beings.
That's not an answer. How do you know what is going to happen in the future as a fact of now?
So a couple of different ways. One, the religious answer is because the Bible says that there's going to be all the way to the very end.
Okay. That's not an answer to me.
But
that answer doesn't move me in the least.
I understand that. So now I'll give you the secular answer. The secular answer is that there's a segment of the population that's always going to want to have more. And those people are gravitate towards power. Those people gravitate towards wealth. One hand washes the other. And so what that means is, as long as there is incentive where I will take what someone else has by force, war will always be a part of the human condition.
I'm on Team Robbie with this. We've got to take some questions here. All right.
Obviously, I disagree.
And F you so. Valhalla, thanks for the dollar. Valhalla did a great video on that Trump is dying of congestive heart failure, how they try to hide it, and how he's pumped up with super experimental weight loss drugs. I mean, he might just be on GLP-1s, right? I mean,
it's not working.
Yeah. Working. No, I mean, if you see a side shot, it's clearly not working.
The drugs aren't working.
Look, I mean, he definitely has those black spots on his hands. His legs are his lower legs are really swollen. He clearly has trouble walking. He's 80 years old. He's overweight. He doesn't eat well. So he doesn't exercise. So it's not surprising that he's not in tip-top shape. His father didn't live to be terribly old. I mean, you know, he could kick at any point. I mean, you know, they're watching him and stuff. He definitely could kick. I guess what do you think would happen under a President J.D. Vance? Let's say we, you know, later this afternoon, J.D. Vance is the President of the United States. How would that affect matters? Like, I think domestically we would continue on the same path. But, you know, in terms of the deportations and the slashing, you know, gutting, you know, social safety programs and politicizing the post office and all that shit would continue. But because that's MAGA, but would it have an effect on Iran? Would it have an effect on? Would it make the deal more solid? Would it? How would it impact our relationship with Israel and so on?
That's a tough one. I mean, I don't believe for a moment that Vance is anti-imperialist. I think anybody who takes the office is going to have an expectation from the standpoint of the public and their base power base to continue on with U.S. policy in general. Like, meaning, can you, like, for example, can you foresee a U.S. president accepting a surrender of, let's say, in Ukraine, for example? I mean, I can't see that. I can't see a U.S. president, regardless of who that president is, looking weak in front of media and, for that matter, in front of on the world stage. We still talk like we're imperialists. The media still talks to the president like he's God Emperor. I don't see Vance, the office is a constraint, if that makes sense. At least I think so. I could be wrong on this. On the Israel front, I don't believe that Vance is going to be that dramatically different, to be honest. But I could be wrong. I hope I am. But I don't see, I think the U.S. policy goes beyond the president of the United States. That's what I think.
Yeah, I think I largely agree with that. I mean, although, you know, I mean, the great man theory of history isn't entirely wrong. I mean,
true, agreed.
Personalities matter, as we're seeing right now with Donald Trump. Personalities do matter. So We'll see. All right.
And by the way, I know that sounds contradictory, but and because it sounds like I'm saying two things at once, I'm agreeing with you in the sense of the great man thing, but both of these things run parallel. You can have a president that tries to claim authority in this way, that basically I am doing this. I don't care what you guys think, right? Because otherwise, what would be the point of having a president at all if the president didn't have the ability to do something different? But they just tend not to. They tend to follow the same pattern. I mean, look, and by the way, Democratic and Republican, the very fact that we can attack Syria now is a result of going through Libya, Iraq, Afghanistan, Syria, et cetera. Meaning it's all of that to get to the point of even being able to attack Iran. That stuff took place over the course of, what, 10, 15 years?
Yeah.
20 years? Yeah. So, yeah.
Let's keep going. Okay, John D. Cockefeller, thanks for the $2. Robbie, are we continuing our Baldur's Gate 3 campaign Saturday night?
Uh-oh.
100%. Absolutely. And for those of you who watch, if y'all have the game, either on console or PC, you are more than welcome to join us. It's fun. JT, we got to get you hooked up. You need to look at that game.
Baldur's Gate is. That's roaming around the castle, right?
No. Okay, so... So there's this channel on Rumble. It's called Putin Bot Gaming. You should check it out. It's got a crap
ton channel.
it's got a crap ton of Baldur's Gate 3 content. Go check it out. You would love it. You would love it. Yeah, I'll tell you what. If you like it, I'll get you a copy.
I'll check it out, and
we'll play. You'll like it. But Saturday, yes.
Okay.
Personally, I would rather play Civ, if I'm being bluntly honest with you. And if we had like 6 or 7 people to play it, I think it would be great. We need to get Ted a copy.
Ted would love that.
Enjoy it, actually.
You know what? No, I could see Ted. No, Ted, he could play as the French. We could play on the Earth map. And I'll play as Germany. You can play as Britain. And we'll just
play as America.
That's fine. We'll
France will rise again. Napoleon's
Great emancipator.
Great emancipator.
Politics. Got a rifle. Only got drop once.
More questions. Okay. Grand Rising boys. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Thank you. Question about the trip, Ted. Are you still traveling to Uzbekistan, and will there be any videos or a vlog? So this is a reference to something that John and I had been planning to do. We were going to go to Central Asia together this summer, later in the summer. But since I haven't heard from John since about an hour before he decided to do his last show, because John's departure has really had a massive financial impact on the show and on me, I can't. I'm not going to go. I would totally go with JT, though. If we get the money, if we get some money going, the problem is, like, time is short. We would have to, you know, like, basically, you don't really want to go after September because you start running into major, you know, winter weather. But, you know, yeah.
I'll go.
I would announce that. I may be going to Iran for the Ayatollah's funeral. And so,
July, right?
Yeah, July 2nd. I'll be there for roughly 5 days.
This is an indelicate question. Where's his body all this time? Is it on ice?
I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I assume they waited until the kinetic part stopped. That's my assumption.
I thought Muslims were supposed to be buried like ASAP the same day.
I don't know.
All right.
I assumed it was kind of like Martin Luther King or Abraham Lincoln been wrote, you know, running through the.
Kajari is buried. It's just a public funeral. It's kind of like how Yamamoto was cremated, but the funeral was like a month after he got killed. That's probably
a memorial service.
It's a memorial service. Yes, it's not an actual funeral.
Okay, I see. Right. Got it. John D. Cockefeller, thanks for the $2. Terminator was meant to be fiction. Yeah, but it turned out to be very, very, very prescient. John D. Cockefeller, I don't foresee Ted being into video games, but we need JT on BG3. He strikes me as a lawful good, which Robbie and I are lacking in our campaign.
Wait, what do you mean? So you could be good in your campaign?
I don't know. This is a Robbie question. I don't know anything about that game.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite open. So the thing about Baldur's Gate 3 is that it's an open sandbox, which is awesome. So every choice that you make will impact the game, from character creation to choices that you make. Like you could be Benjamin Netanyahu level of evil, or you could be like a pacifist. It's entirely up to how it is that you want to do it. And it is a ton of fun. You've got to check it out.
See, under normal circumstances, my rule is I leave people to their devices, even in Civ. until you fuck with me, in which case all bets are off and I become a maniac. It's like, instead they used to have nuclear Gandhi. Like people used to be like, how is Gandhi dropping nukes? Because Gandhi used to be a bit of a lunatic in one of those games.
Yeah.
No, man, I'm very chill until you fuck with me, in which case I become a monster.
Okay. Well, because the game starts off with you being screwed around with, and a mind flayer puts a tadpole in your eye. So you start off being screwed with.
I'm going to be a monster in the game.
Yeah.
I can tell.
For sure.
I would have. Check it out. I would have.
You know. Yeah, go to Putin Bot Gaming. Take a look. You'll like it. A
couple things. By the way, breaking news. Venezuela's death count from the earthquake has now officially risen to 589. So it's going to obviously keep going, unfortunately. Okay, we have an ad. It's been a long time. Rumble has been very stingy, but here we go. Let me go ahead and do this one. All right, it's for Rumble Wallet. All right, we hear a lot about crypto, but here's the one. Here's the part most people miss. Crypto was created so you could actually own and control your money. After the 2008 financial crisis, Bitcoin was designed as an alternative to banks. So instead of a bank holding your money, delaying transfers, or limiting access, you're in control. And if you've ever had to wait for a transfer to clear, you've felt that problem. Now, fast forward to today. Everyone's heard of crypto, but getting started still feels complicated. That's exactly why we use Rumble Wallet. It takes all that complexity and makes it simple. Choose what you want, Bitcoin, dollar-backed stablecoins, or even digital gold backed by real gold. No complicated setup. It connects with MoonPay, so you can use your credit card, debit card, or bank and be up and running in minutes. Once you're set up, you can even support your favorite Rumble creators like us directly. So do it now. Scan the QR code or click the link in the description and download Rumble Wallet. From there, you can set up your wallet, tap buy, and you're in the game. In just a few minutes, you can go from hearing about crypto to actually owning some. Okay, more questions. John D. Cockefeller, $1. Iran is just days away from developing nuclear drones. We need to intervene now. Israel in a few days. F.E. Soto, thanks for the dollar. Whoever invades Israel and confiscates their nukes deserves a peace prize of some sort. Oh, like all the peace prizes. P.W. Walker, thanks for the dollar. Sociopaths are always attracted to power, and that's why no-ism can survive contact with them. They will always manipulate others for material gain.
True, but that's different than a society that knows that. Like, you know, when I tell you that laws are made in good faith and they shouldn't be, shit like that, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just have to figure out a way to deal with sociopaths. And you would hope that a post-nuclear war society, at the point where we blow shit to hell and people, you know, come from the rubble, that impression would be so grounded in them that however they create their society, they create their society around the whole notion of keeping these people out of power. That's the hope. Anyway, is that possible? I think so, especially with awareness. But I understand that you two disagree with me on that. And yeah. By the way, notice I postulate a calamity of enormous proportion from the standpoint of the world to get to that point, because otherwise I don't know how to get
there. Listen, if, let's say in the example that you brought up, you know, let's just say Donald Trump, if he knows that starting a war, that attacking Iran means that there's a high likelihood that Melania is going to die, like in a week, because, you know, the Iranians can send a micro drone and, you know, and kill her. Is he going to start that war?
Yes.
Maybe less likely,
I think. Or
he personally is going to die.
Okay, that's better. That's better, because I don't think he gives a shit about anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I just think, yeah. Or all his buildings are going to be blown up by $100 drones.
Or his kids.
Yeah.
Your kids are going to die if you do this.
This week.
We're going to release the Epstein files if you do this. Tomorrow.
They're going to Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, I think that might really truly be mutual assured destruction, finally realized.
Yeah. If you basically, in our society, if you go to war, the public has to consent. Otherwise, you know, you got to.
Meaning, even if they do, you may all still die.
Yeah.
Your society might not consent either. If they're like, if it's kind of like, okay, so we're going to go to war against Iran. But you're all going to be dead within a few days. It's like,
or there needs to be cost. I just think there needs to be shared cost in some way, the way the leadership shouldn't be isolated from the cost.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that. Like, meaning you shouldn't be able to get rich off of us being in war. You shouldn't be able to gain, meaning nobody in society should be able to gain from it. So right. Weapons manufacturers shouldn't be able to get billions of dollars when people are getting themselves killed. Financial companies shouldn't be able to profit when we're getting ourselves killed. Shared sacrifice. So yes, people may lose their lives. You are not going to get your profits. Your people may, like, there needs to be some kind of cost. Otherwise, you create this isolated bubble that people are in that are sending other people off to die with other people still getting profits. Obviously, people who are getting profits have an incentive for the wars to continue. The people have in power may have an incentive from the standpoint of their own ideological wants, as you point out, of expansion and greed and et cetera. I'm saying something needs, there needs to be a structure that disallows that in some way in a society that's rational.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not what we've evolved to. We've just kind of, it's not like society has ever stepped out of itself and thought to itself, hey, what do we need to look like? It's only been this kind of just pivot and move, pivot and move, pivot and move. Well, that may break. That chain may break. And when that chain breaks, we may get something different. That's what I'm postulating as being on some level necessary. Otherwise, we're just going to end ourselves.
Right.
We can't keep going like this. That's my point.
Oh, no, clearly. By the way, we have a very generous supporter, Alexander G. Thank you so much for two generous donations, one for 20 Norwegian krona, another for 200 Norwegian krona. This stingy support, on the first comment. And on the second 200, I really do appreciate your work. And Robbie, we appreciate you, and we appreciate Robbie also. And also San Palmasano, thanks so much for the $44. Question for all. Favorite U.S. president of all time? Question for Robbie. Favorite game of all time, besides Baldur's Gate? Love you all. Keep up the good work. I can't get past Thomas Jefferson as my favorite president. He's my favorite.
I think FDR for me.
Andrew Jackson for me. Because, I mean, he went to war. It's because he went to war against the West. Sometimes that's what you need. I mean, he was the first. I mean, he was a frontiersman. He was definitely a creature of his time.
Killer.
But the fact that he killed the Bank of the United States and kept us from becoming
an economy.
A banking cartel.
Ended up as a banking cartel anyway. So, I mean,
yeah, but it took 90 years for it to happen.
Yeah, Woodrow.
So, yeah.
It happened in 1837 when the economy collapsed.
Well, that happens. As far as my favorite game besides Baldur's Gate 3, I would have to say Rome Total War because it has
games.
Yeah, it has a lot of everything. It's got economics, it's got politics, yeah. It's got war, it's real-time strategy. It's a great game, and I actually take a page out of JT's book. I'll leave you alone to screw with me, but if you do, I will salt your fields, pillage your cities, and then raise them to the ground.
Yeah, I'm horrible when somebody fucks me.
I could give Titus lessons on how to erase a city from the face of the earth.
Yeah, I go on genocidal rampages when countries fuck with me. Like, you better destroy me if you're fucking with me. And my ex-wife used to, like, get so pissed off because I would have, like, spies and stuff, and she would be upstairs playing, I would be downstairs playing, and she would have, like, the spy going to her country, and she would be like, you motherfucker, I hear you, what you doing? Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. I love those games.
No, I mean, Andrew Jackson, he was such a complicated figure, and it was just...
Oh, sure. So was Jefferson.
So were all of them.
Yeah.
I think what I liked about Andrew Jackson is that he was very honest. Like, you knew what he was and who he was, and especially the people who insulted Rachel, his wife. It's like he took that grudge to his grave. He's like, I will end you.
True. That is true. Guys, we have 9 minutes left. We should talk about these. I don't know. There's not a lot to say about the Iran thing, but I definitely want to talk about this postal service thing. I thought it was disturbing. I don't know, JT, am I being paranoid? So basically, there's this controversy here in the U.S. where the Republicans have decided for some reason that they don't like absentee ballots. There's no indication, by the way, that that the use of absentee ballots disfavors Republicans or harms them in any way. They haven't really suffered in the elections. I mean, when they get their voters out to the polls or to the mailbox, it works just as well. But whatever, it's like a burr in their saddle about election. They think it's full of election fraud. So Trump is demanding that all the states turn over their absentee voter lists, which, to be clear, are highly confidential information, over to the federal government for God knows what purpose, to the Homeland Security Department, which is, of course, incredibly untrustworthy and terrifying. And they say that the Postmaster General, who is basically Trump's bitch, is saying, okay, well, we will go along with the administration and we will not mail. So in other words, our sorting machines will look for absentee ballots in the states that don't do this, and we won't deliver them. So in other words, talk about election interference. This is like, I live in a state that has these ballots and is not going to cooperate with the United States government. So I mail in my ballot, which is how a lot of Americans vote now, and I don't receive my, and then it never arrives. I think I voted. They shred it, but I was disenfranchised. I mean, that to me is a big fucking deal, even as a threat. And I mean, what's next? Are they going to just say, "Oh, you know, hey, you're a dirty socialist, Ted. We're not going to deliver your check to Visa so that they don't get your payment this month, or you're not going to deliver your paycheck from your syndicate to you, so you'll starve this month." I mean, what the fuck?
I guess the question is, when does? For one, I agree with you. I mean, this is problematic on several fronts. One, the whole point of bureaucracy is that, or one of the points of bureaucracy is that it's not imperially managed, right? Like the whole thing of Nixon using IRS to go against political enemies. I mean, that was seen to be, frowned upon. It's frowned upon because you don't necessarily want somebody with that much power, using that much power to act like a king or guard emperor to be able to use the material of government itself to go after political enemies, which is effectively what Trump is using the post office to do. Mm-hmm. The idea, I mean, for one, we get the government we deserved. They put his ass back in office as opposed to impeaching him and putting him in a cage.
Two-party system, we do not get the government that we deserve. We get two shitty choices.
Yeah, I mean, who chooses those choices?
Not us.
Support the system. Millions of people still go vote for these shitty choices.
Sure, like, but nobody torched the White House. And you know, as we saw with Bernie, people can go and support someone, and it doesn't matter.
Okay, I am not of the belief that if 300 million people, or if even a good percentage of those people, decided that they want something else, that they don't get something else. That is a force. That sure, you could shoot part of them, but how many of them can you actually stop? I'm making a point that we still acquiesce to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we say, this goes to culpability of Americans, which I think is a fascinating.
They are culpable. And by the way, we have a couple of big donations I want to, and some questions to go with them. So I definitely want to, touch upon these. Sam Palmisano, by the way, thanks so much for that $44 from before. And also an additional $100 just coming in. Wow. We'll keep watching and donating until I get I apologize if I'm not pronouncing this right. Mecha Chameleon Gaming Stream. Different question. What traits would you look for in a person that was going to be marrying your son or daughter in this modern generation / Generation Z? That's pertinent to me since I have a kid of recently marriageable age. Nice. I would say loyalty to personal loyalty, but loyalty to my son would be the thing I'm looking for. Someone who's going to be there for him no matter what. And mental flexibility. Someone who's able to pivot and react to changing circumstances and be able to help think him out of the box. Because A lot of people are very like stiff and rigid in their thinking, and they can't recognize changing circumstances. And we live in a very disruptive world right now. Those would be the two things I would look for. Plus, I'd like her to be pretty so that my kids are cute. My grandkids are cute.
Go ahead, Robbie. You have a kid. I don't.
Yeah. For me, the important thing is I want them to marry a Christian, so that way they're equally yoked. At least have a moral foundation that they're able to relate to each other. And then the parrot Ted, marry someone who you're able to honor and who will honor you in return, and help each other out. Be a helpmeet. And that's the most important thing. You just have someone that whenever life knocks you down, who can help you up and vice versa. And have a lot of kids, a lot of grandkids. That's what I want.
I want lots of grandkids too. Pugs and Bubs, thanks so much for the $50 donation. No message. Thoroughly enjoy the show and make sure to watch it every day. Have a great weekend. You too, thanks, Pugs and Bubs. Anyway, you were saying.
I don't have a kid, but I think if I had a kid, yeah, I agree with you, Ted. This idea of honesty, loyalty, intellectual flexibility. I would prefer them to be, and softness with each other.
Sweet. Sweetness.
And I know that.
Sweetness is rare.
No, I say softness.
Oh, okay.
Like meaning there's a level of forgiveness built into the people that when they engage each other, they engage each other in somewhat of a soft way, if that makes sense. That's hard to explain. Like how in charts, it would be like a lot of Neptune in a positive sense, like moon to Neptune, moon to Venus, that type of stuff, where the people, how they relate emotionally, it's not harsh. They care. They give a shit in real terms, not just in a marriage sense, but they actually care about each other in a human sense that goes beyond the marriage, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think that's huge.
I don't care if they have kids. I don't want to be Christian.
I need the raw family line to continue.
Right, right, right. Right.
It's like once we take over the world.
Well, kids are important because if you don't have, if you're not passing the world down to the next generation, what do you care if it gets better or not? I mean,
I can care about whatever I want to care about.
That's
the only thing that matters are the things I care about.
I'm not talking about you in general. I'm just talking about corporately. I mean, if people have kids or grandkids, if they have any kind of a moral center at all, want to leave a better world behind than the one that they inherited.
True.
If the line ends with you, the baby boomers, right? They had theirs. They don't care.
That's not true. Why do you think that? People care about whatever they care about.
But I mean, that's the reputation that they have, right? They're arguably the greediest generation. Like they had the best of both worlds.
Yeah.
And now their kids, their grandkids are being left with the scraps, and they still have the political power to go in and effect change, but they don't because it's still all about them.
Yeah.
The point that I'm trying to make is that someone who there's no greater love than being a parent.
I know, but you've just made the argument that even people who have kids in this quote greatest generation, as they call themselves, despite the fact, as you pointed out, the greatest generation,
yeah,
they have kids and they don't give a shit.
Correct. And I think picking
on me. Quickly.
Yeah, no, I'm not picking on you. What I'm talking about is just people in general. Like you have a vested interest in the future if there's a future that you're leaving behind. We all die.
Just pointed out. Okay, I'm sorry.
All right, guys, we're going to have to leave that there. We'll be back Monday, 9 a.m. Eastern time. We can pick that up or anything else we want. Have a great weekend, everyone. TMI Show with Manila Chan and myself. Coming up right now, DMC America dealing with basically sex scandals and abuse scandals in the world of cartooning. That's in 1 hour from now on YouTube and Rumble. Keep it right here for all of that. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, guys. See you soon.
Have a good one, guys.